Coming up on this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast, Carl and Jason turn the spotlight on the supporting cast of the Star Wars saga. Characters we love and characters the saga can't do without round out their top five lists. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Wampa's Lair Podcast is episode number 113, our top five supporting characters. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, we have the Kylo Ren to my BB-8, we have Carl LeClaire.
So I've got to be the bad boy. Okay, that's fine. Ain't no thing.
Well, I mean, you like the lightsaber.
So I do like the lightsaber. Why not? Yeah, yeah. And you are like a soccer ball droid.
For those of you that are completely have no idea what the heck we're talking about, they announced the names for everybody in the trailer yesterday.
Yeah, it was yesterday. They released it to Entertainment Weekly, and of course that thing trended like crazy very quickly.
Yes. And if you want to see the full list of names or know what we're talking about, if you haven't seen it, we did post it to our Facebook page, so it's on our Facebook and our Twitter, so go ahead and check it out there. Yes.
I'm sure most of you have seen that by now.
Probably. Yeah. But
it was cool. You know, this is, again, the exciting thing about new Star Wars movies is obviously news is going to be popping up like crazy for the upcoming years.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, getting these character names was really cool. But, you know, Jason and I were talking right before we started to record about how the fact that the spoilers, you know, there's like all these, you know, supposed spoilers who know everything. And they were dead wrong about Daisy Ridley's character name.
Yep.
She was
Everybody
Kira.
Thought it was Kira, but yep. No.
Nope. She's got no last name yet, so she could be a Solo. We don't know.
She could be, but yeah. Rey. You know,
Rey
is not Kira. There's not any way that is close, except for the fact that there's less than four letters in both of those names.
Yep, exactly.
So,
yeah. So, you know, it's pretty cool to get these character names. But I don't really have anything to say about it except, hey, it's cool. We have character names.
Yeah,
we don't know anything about them.
Yeah. We can stop calling it Soccer Ball Droid and Daisy Ridley's character and stuff. We can actually like call them by their names, but right. You know, none of them seemed out of place to me, so I don't really have anything to say about them.
Soccer Ball Droid had a perfect name, though. I felt like that one fit him perfectly. BB-8. Like, he looks... BB-8 sounds fun. He looks fun.
And according to Peter Mayhew on his Facebook, he said, you know, we can finally... I can finally call him BB-8 or BB to his friends. So...
Oh my gosh, yeah. So always cool to get something new from episode 7. So
yes.
I will take it.
Exactly.
You know, if we're going to be talking about Star Wars episodes, why not talk about the greatest episode of all, episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. Obviously my opinion, but our latest poll saw us asking you guys for your favorite scene in The Empire Strikes Back. And I was normally when we do these polls, I don't really follow them as much until like we get to the show, because I kind of just let Jason collect them. And it's actually a little bit more exciting that way, because I don't know. I kind of, you know, I get to hear things for the first time. But I love Empire. So I've been like reading everybody's posts as they post them, just because it's like, ooh, what did you put? Ooh, what did you put? And most of them I'm not surprised by. Anyway, Jason, why don't you take that away?
Yes, and we didn't get quite as many this time, but that's because we had sort of a short period that the poll was up. We ended up recording a little bit earlier than we thought we were initially, but that's okay.
So in fifth place, we have several of them with only one vote each. One of them is Yoda's dissertation on the Force, the carbon freezing chamber, the torture scene. Joe Hogan decided to humor Carl here, and I'm not sure. I almost didn't put it on the list.
No, thank you. I was talking to him the other day, and I was like, dude, you haven't put it in our poll yet, and you're an Empire fan. Get on it. So that's what he put. Because I said, I really want to talk about the torture scene, but everybody's going to think I'm weird. And he's like, I'll do it.
So that's a true friend, though. That Joe is looking friend. Weird for you.
Yes.
But a couple of other ones that only had one vote each. The I Am Your Father moment, specifically. The Wampa's Lair. Not the podcast, the actual cave. the Bespin escape, the whole Bespin escape, including the intercutting between the Luke Vader duel. The bounty hunters. Somebody said Vader and all of the scenes with his Star Destroyer crew. I'm guessing primarily the choking scenes. And then the final one with one vote is the dinner betrayal, or as I accidentally wrote on my paper here, the diner betrayal.
Hey, Carl, you guys want to go to Denny's? All right, fine. You think Darth Vader's going to be there? No way. Lando runs it. He ain't got no love for the Empire.
Right, but the dinner betrayal was your scene.
Sure was. I can't believe nobody else picked this. It's amazing.
I'm a little surprised too.
It's actually, I mean, it was really hard for me to pick one scene from Empire, but this mm-hmm. is the one scene that always kind of makes me like jump up a bit. Even if I have it like on in the background, it always grabs me. Now there are scenes with Yoda that definitely do that, but there's just something about this. And I'm a Han Solo fan. At the end of the day, as much as I love the hero journey of Luke in this movie, I love Han Solo. So, you know, the torture scene honestly is scarily kind of right up there too, but I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to scare people away. So I think this actually does take the cake too. I don't know. There's just something so exciting about this scene, you know, even though I know, you know, I've seen this movie a million times, I know it's coming, but when those doors slide open and the Imperial March song is played and Han just whips out his blaster. I mean, I just love it. I love him just taking on Vader like that. I think it's so cool. And I also wanted to mention this because I watched Empire again last week. And I never noticed this before. If you watch as the stormtroopers come running, rushing down the stairs to like kind of hold up Han, Leia, and Chewie, one mm-hmm. of the stormtroopers in the back slides across the floor a little bit. Obviously, the floor is very slick. You see, like if you look at the stormtrooper up on the top step all the way to the left as you're looking at it, you'll see as he slides in, he slides a little bit further because his shoes like don't have any traction on the smooth floor. I noticed that for the first time. And I was like, ooh, something new. I wonder if we should do an episode on this. No, I'm just kidding. What is your favorite scenes of lack of traction in Star Wars? That episode's got no traction. Oh, boy. Please continue.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's fun. Now you've got me thinking of any other scenes that might have any sort of slippage.
There's got to be some on Hoth.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, thank you for humoring me. You're so good.
You completely derailed me. congratulations. All right. In fourth place with two votes each, as I try to get back on track, is Yoda raising the X-Wing from the swamp and the asteroid field chase. In third place with three votes each, and this is where my vote went, was Yoda meeting Luke and R2 for the first time, where he's acting crazy and gets into the fight with R2 over the lamp. So, and obviously, I like this scene because it's funny, and Yoda and R2 get to have a fight, and it's awesome. And it's weird that I picked this because it is on my least favorite planet of the entire saga, Dagobah, because I cannot stand swamps, but I do grant that it's great for the story. But I mean, yes, just because it's on the planet I hate doesn't mean I don't love the scene. The scene is great.
How you get so big eating food of this kind? Oh, man, that was bad.
It was pretty good until you started to do the laugh.
Yeah. That was me, everybody. Carl. Ha ha. That's me as being Jason.
But we still have two scenes to go. In second place with 4 votes was the Battle of Hoth. A lot of people like that. Obviously, there are some people that really like it, as you know, Chris Hawkeye's Planet Smith decided to have as part of his nickname. So, yeah. And then, of course, number one is Luke versus Vader. You know, the whole duel, including where he pops out and, you know, Vader pops out and surprises us all, you know, when Luke's looking for him downstairs in the arcade. it looks like an arcade. And, of course, you know, yeah. I am your father.
Yeah.
Is part of that duel. So that had 6 votes. But the top 3 were pretty close. So that was kind of neat. But what do you think about the list overall?
I think it's good. I'm not surprised. I don't feel like anything was left out.
No.
I could have seen a little bit more Yoda stuff on there. I was surprised. Again, like you said, you know, we didn't have a lot of time with this one up. So right. I feel like maybe a lot of people didn't get to weigh in. I was surprised the Carbonite Chamber didn't get more votes. That's one thing, as well as the asteroid field. Battle of Hoth, I'm surprised didn't win, to be honest. It's not my favorite. I know most people love the Battle of Hoth and Empire. It's not even in my probably top 5 scenes of Empire. I enjoy it, but it's definitely not my favorite.
Right.
I don't really know why. There's elements of it I really like, and there's elements I'm just kind of like, eh. You know, obviously Chris, you know, he took the nickname Chris Hawthorne's Planet Smith. Mm-hmm. What if I was Carl Torture Scene LeClaire? Dark. And creepy.
People would start looking at you shiftily like, what's he going to do? Do you have like, is he going to torture me if I turn him around? If I turn my back, is he going to torture me?
I wonder when they're going to bring like the torture rack to like a celebration event so you can take your pictures on that. That'd be fun. All right, can we move on?
That'll be the shortest line.
I bet you it wouldn't. Are you kidding me? People would get a kick out of that.
They might. But yeah. There's quite a few other props that people would like to see first.
Yeah, most I'd love to see a tucked in Tauntaun. Like that should be a little event, you know, tuck inside a Tauntaun.
Yeah!
You know?
That would be cool.
And they could sell scratch and stiff Snickers there that smelled really bad. Be like, did you get your exclusive C7 scratch and sniff? It stinks. And you thought it smelled bad on the outside. Man, I should be like, what do they call those people? A media person. There we go. Marketing. Yeah.
Marketing. You should be one of the marketing people for like the 501st or somebody.
Yeah.
Nice. We have a new matchup that was given to us by Larian for the end of the show, so stick around for that, and also a Larian inquiry. But we have a topic first, and what are we talking about this episode, Mr. LeClaire?
Supporting characters. This actually, darn it, I can't remember who made the comment on our wall. I want to say it was Roger Peroni. I could be wrong.
I'm going back to check right now.
Well, as Jason checks, I will bring up what he basically said, you know, because I made a comment in our last episode about how we haven't really talked about Lando that much, right? And he goes, yeah, you guys don't talk about Lando that much. And it just got me thinking, like, why don't we do an episode on, like, some of our, like, favorite supporting characters, like, characters that we don't necessarily, like, love as our favorites, but that without them, the story would not be the same. That was kind of how I looked at it. And that's the way I kind of ranked my list for the top 5 is, though, I was originally going to do, like, my favorite ones, my favorite supporting characters, but I kind of went in the way of going more like, well, here's, to me, the top 5 supporting characters that we really, really need. So like this guy we could get away with, and then all the way up to number 1, it's like the story wouldn't be the same without these supporting characters, but you know who it is.
Yes. I looked it up and it was Gerhard. He said, you're right. You don't talk enough about Lando on your show. Smiley face. Lando was the man. Nice episode. But yes.
Yes. Thank you, Gerhard.
That was his response.
Yeah. But yes. I thought that was like a great point. And it's like, you know what? We should do something with supporting characters. And again, these are, at least for me, like these are characters that the movies just wouldn't be the same without them. So,
my supporting character list, sort of filled out like this is, you know, these are like my favorite characters that, you know, don't play major roles in the films, but I did say they had to be in multiple scenes. They couldn't just be like one scene, like, Dexter, which I love Dexter, but yeah. These are probably going to be more minor characters than what you picked. But they had to be in multiple scenes, and I didn't want them to be like main characters in any movies.
Okay.
So if they were like a main character in one movie, but they weren't a main character in other movies, then I didn't pick them. So Jar Jar didn't make the list because he's sort of a main character in The Phantom Menace. Yeah. Lando didn't make my list because he's sort of a main character in Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
So it's that sort of thing. So I was like, I need to put limits on this. Otherwise, I will have a list that is about 20 characters long. So, so that was sort of my own personal way to narrow it down before I started making the list. So that's how I did it. And I've got two honorable mentions, and you've got one. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you can kick it off.
I will do that. My first honorable mention is Bail Organa. I like the guy. He's a bastion of truth and justice. He's not Superman.
Yeah, he's not lame.
Hey, watch it. Watch it, mister.
Sorry.
But I mean, I like him because, you know, he plays a pivotal role. Even though he's not a main character, he does end up raising Leia, even though that's primarily off screen. And we got to see him flesh out a little bit more in the Clone Wars and a little bit in Rebels. So we saw him briefly in Rebels. So, and of course he's had a big impact on, you know, the Legends universe too. So, but I mean, as far as movies concerned, not a major character, a supporting character, but I really like him. And Jimmy Smits does a great job as Bail Organa. So, I figured I'd put him on the list.
That's a great pick. He's not on mine, but that is a great pick. I really like Bail Organa in the Clone Wars series. They do a really good job of giving his character some real weight. So
yes,
yeah, I like it, and I feel like, again, kind of like you've talked about in the past before with Padme, Bail Organa is kind of an underused character in Episode 3, and that's because, you know, again, a lot of the key scenes were cut.
Right.
So. But yeah, great character. And I love that we've already seen him in Rebels. So I'm sure we'll see him again.
Yes.
Which is great. So
yes. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's your honorable mention?
My honorable mention, I think you'll appreciate this, is Captain Tarples.
Hey, Yusa, stop it there.
Captain Tarples, Misa back.
No again, Jaja. Yusa going to the buses. Yusa and big doo-doo this time.
Aww.
yeah, I really like Captain Tarples. Even when Episode 1 came out, I really liked the Gungans. I wasn't crazy about Jar Jar, but I thought the Gungans themselves were actually pretty cool characters. The fact that they live underwater and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of amphibian type creatures, they were really cool to me. And I liked Captain Tarples because he is one of the few that we really get to know. Like, obviously, Boss Nass and Jar Jar and Captain Tarples are really the only ones we get to know. But Captain Tarples, like when I first saw him in Episode 1, I thought he was funny, but he was also serious, right? Mm-hmm. Like Jar Jar is just like a complete klutz and kind of little screw up, whereas Captain Tarples is like, nope, that's not every Gungan. Like there are some like real serious warrior class Gungans like Captain Tarples.
I get the feeling that Captain Tarples is more your average Gungan than any of the other Gungans we get to know.
Yeah.
Because obviously Boss Nass, he's the leader. He has to be big and important. And Jar Jar, like you said, he's a misfit.
Right.
He's not supposed to fit in. So.
Who wants to play with a Charlie in the box? We're on the island of misfit Gungans.
Toys.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Too. It is getting close to Christmas, and I do love Rudolph. let me guess. Jack. No! Charlie! Rudy. Nobody wants to play with a Charlie in the box. Anyway, sorry.
I'm a water pistol who shoots jelly!
How would you like to be a boat that can't stay afloat? Sorry. Okay, this isn't a Rudolph podcast.
No. Let's come back to Star Wars. Captain Tarples. Anything else you were trying to say about him?
The only other thing is, it's awesome that we see him take on Grievous in the Clone Wars too.
Yeah.
That like totally upped his coolness as well. So, and he does well against Grievous. Like, don't mess with Tarples. And I do like the fact that Tarples too, we see him like he's very like compassionate to Jar Jar. Really, right? Like Jar Jar has clearly been banished. Tarples doesn't like attack him aggressively and like subdue him, right? Like he takes him to the bosses. And then when Jar Jar kind of unites the Naboo and the Gungans at the end of the film, Tarples is like all on board for helping Jar Jar succeed as a general. I think that's really cool. It shows the type of person Captain Tarples is like, he's not like, oh, why is he a general? He's an idiot, right? Like, he's like, nope, this is what our, you know, boss Nass has picked, and I will help in any way that I can. Like, I just think it shows that he's a really good soldier.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. You know, no getting up, General Jar Jar. We still think of something.
Hands up. My give up. My give up.
No.
We even get a great face palm from Captain Tarples.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you like to be a cowboy who rides an ostrich? All right, sorry. I'm just going to keep throwing in random misfit toys throughout the episode.
Oh, my goodness. What have I done? What have I done?
You are fulfilling your destiny, Anakin.
All right, I'm going to move on to mine. My next honorable mention. Oh, man. I love you, Carl.
Right back at you.
Oh. But my next honorable mention is Plo Koon.
Ooh.
And this is primarily because of the Clone Wars. His character really was fleshed out a lot more there. He's just, you know, a real even, you know, steady, level-headed Jedi who's got a great voice. James Arnold Taylor.
Yeah.
Wonderful job. But I mean, obviously he's sort of Dave Filoni's favorite. So we got him a lot more fleshed out in the Clone Wars than obviously the movies, because he never talked and didn't do anything except sit down either on the council or in a starfighter that was blowing up. We saw him briefly in the arena, I guess, but that was it. But I mean, he's a cool looking character, which is why I sort of liked him from the movies going into the Clone Wars. But then we got to see him more fleshed out in the Clone Wars. And the relationship that he had with Ahsoka was pretty cool. And so I felt he deserved an honorable mention on my list. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to throw in one more quick honorable mention then, because I totally forgot to put this guy on my list and I was going to. But then when I like kind of rethought of like, oh, well, here's how I'm going to do my list.
Right.
It wasn't like, here's my favorite ones. But my favorite side supporting Jedi is Ki-Adi Mundi. I love Ki-Adi Mundi.
Really?
I've always loved him. And I don't know why, because, you know, again, like just like Plo Koon, he's not really fleshed out. He's not even fleshed out as that much in the Clone Wars series. I think what I really liked about him, actually, I don't know if you remember this, when the action figure came out, when The Phantom Menace first came out in theaters, Ki-Adi Mundi actually had I think it was a yellow lightsaber.
Might have been purple.
Or was it purple? Yeah, that's right.
I think it was purple because he had a purple one in the comics.
Oh, okay. But I always liked him. And actually, the first time I saw Revenge of the Sith with my cousins, we misheard one of the lines and we just thought it was hilarious. So the scene when they're like sitting in the councils and, you know, they think they have found Grievous and the Utapau system, and Ki-Adi Mundi says, you know, I can't go. Well, he says,
oh, goodness.
Oh, he's like, Master Kenobi should go. Somebody says Master Kenobi should go.
I concur.
I concur, he says,
Master
right?
Master Kenobi should go.
I concur. Yes. Master Kenobi should go. I thought when we first heard that, I thought he said is, I can't go. Master Kenobi should go. Like, he was being lazy. Like, I can't go. Send him. So like when we heard that, we're like, oh my God, he's the laziest Jedi. So I've always had a soft spot for him since then too. So
that's funny.
Yeah, I misheard that line.
Yeah, no, he's a cool Jedi. I mean,
he is cool.
He's cool. He's definitely by the book. We really got that, especially later on in the Clone Wars. He was definitely the by the book, you know, regulations, and these are important. You know, he sort of stuck up, but I mean,
yeah, there's a bit of arrogance to him. I just like him because he looks cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's cool, but I mean, you know, that the stuck upness is just another aspect to his character.
Right.
But yeah, I always liked him. He's the only other Jedi that really talks in the movies. So, I mean,
yeah.
Why not? Why not? But I mean, now we're at our top five.
Yeah. But P.S. real quick. I think it's funny that whenever the Jedi Council makes a decision, it's basically just up to Obi-Wan, Ki-Adi Mundi, Yoda, and Mace. Everybody else is like, whatever. I guess their votes were off camera.
Yes.
Or it's an electoral college. Who knows? Doesn't make sense.
Oh, man. It's they're voting affirmative or negative in the Force, and they sense that.
Oh, yeah. Mace Windu is like, I felt a tremor in the Force.
Somebody didn't like it.
Somebody didn't like it. Who didn't like it? We all hate you, Mace.
Oh, man. Anyways, number five. My number five is Watto.
Oh, yeah. Dang it. Crap in a hat.
And, I mean, he's just a crazy, you know, great character. He's crazy. He's, you know, he's all about the money because no money, no parts, no deal. And, you know, he's not taken advantage of, especially when it comes to his cash. I mean, come on. That's what drives this guy. Yeah. But he's just this – he's important, obviously, because he owns Anakin as a slave, Anakin and his mother. And, you know, Qui-Gon has to find a way to free Anakin so that he can become a Jedi. But I just always liked the character. The design is cool. It was something completely out of the box that we'd never really conceived of before going into The Phantom Menace. And the voice work is great. And I wish I could remember who does the voice for Watto, and I don't have the time to look that up off the top of my head. But
I think it was Jake Lloyd. I'm just kidding. It was totally Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, no money, no parts, no deal. Get to the chopper. Get to the pod race.
I'm a caboose with square wheels.
Sorry. Oh my goodness. Oh dear. Watto owns the island of Misfit Toys.
Probably. Yeah.
He sent a bunch of things there.
King Moongazer is a slave. All right. Anyway. That's a great pick. Did you want to say more?
No, I think I'm good. I mean, it also gave us sort of a gritty feel to some of these characters that, you know, we hadn't really had time to explore with in the OT. Mm. You know, gritty, normal, you know, secondhand store kind of owner.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. You know, I'm swapping out my number five for Watto because I can't believe I forgot him. I also have always really liked Watto, and he's extremely important. I mean, he owns Anakin. Mm-hmm. You know, he's part of the reason Anakin is such damaged goods. You know, in a sense.
Right.
So my number five was Wedge, just because I freaking love Wedge. But I've talked about him on other episodes, so I'm just going to kind of push him to the wayside. So all you Wedge fans are probably like, no, you can't do that. It's Wedge. Trust me, I feel bad too. I love him. But he's an honorable mention.
I will bring him up later.
Okay, great. But yeah, you know, Watto is – he's such a central character, you know. And I love how he isn't – you know, he's a slaver whose whole world gets flipped when he encounters Qui-Gon and the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Well, Qui-Gon, he's the only Jedi he encounters. But he's a great character and extremely important to who Anakin Skywalker is, because even though, like, every time we see Watto interact with Anakin in the film, and again, this is a children's film, but, you know, he's not abusive to Anakin, but there are, I remember in the novel, the episode one novel, there is like a scene where like Watto like gives it to Anakin. And Anakin sometimes talks in the novel about how Anakin would give him... Oh, it's actually mentioned in the Revenge of the Sith novel about how Anakin's like feeling so, you know, worried and scared about Padme. It's like a reflection of like, I can deal with physical pain. Watto put me through plenty of that. That's no problem. It's this emotional stuff. But, you know, it's clear that Watto as his owner probably did treat him somewhat roughly. And that's important to how Anakin develops and understands himself.
The other thing is Watto would make Anakin race pod racers for his gambling habit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, Anakin is a piece of property.
Yeah. And Anakin liked to race.
Right.
But I mean, sometimes he probably had to race inferior racers, you know, because Watto doesn't like to spend money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But he's got a gambling habit.
He smashed up my pod in the last race and it takes him a long time to fix it.
Great pick.
I actually saved the pod, mostly.
That you did. The boy is good, no doubts there, huh?
Sorry.
Exactly. Well, I won't continue on because that's a long scene from that point. So,
oh man, we quote a lot of episode one on here. Joe Hogan.
We do.
That's probably his favorite part. So anyway, so that was my number five too. Good pick, Jason.
Thank you.
So what's your number four?
My number four is Newt Gunray Ooh. I've always been a fan of Newt Gunray.
Yes.
I know everybody's like, what? And we even got a comment on our iTunes.
Yeah.
When we did our top five villains episode, and Newt Gunray was up there, and I didn't have Thrawn on my list. And he's like, if you like Newt Gunray more than you like Thrawn, you're doing it wrong. And I was like, eh, whatever. But I mean, I've always liked Newt Gunray. I think he's a great character. He amuses me, but he's this like this wheedling, like sniveling character who's only bad because that's where the money is. And that's what's going to give him the most profit. And he got, you know, into business with the wrong people. But then sometimes he gets really into this idea that he is bad and he likes being bad, because as we see in Attack of the Clones, he gets really upset when Padme starts to escape from the creatures in the Geonosis arena. You know, she can't do that. Jango, finish them off. You know, he gets really upset that Padme is not dying. And so he's obviously slightly off. This character, he's just a bit off.
Yeah.
But I mean, I also just love the voice. that's half the reason why I like him, you know. But yeah, Newt Gunray. I was a little disappointed that he wasn't more featured in Revenge of the Sith or the Clone Wars. I mean, we got him in seasons 1 and 2, but that was it. Mm-hmm. He never showed up after that, which I was a little. That didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure he's not a fan favorite, for one. No. But he is a good character. He's a good supporting villain in the sense of he's easily manipulated, right? I mean, I think that's part of the PT story, is a lot of the bad guys are people that can be easily manipulated because the Sidious knows their weakness. Well, Newt Gunray's weakness, and seems to be that of the Trade Federation, is money and, you know, power. So dangle that in front of them and they'll take it, right? So exactly. Newt Gunray is your very basic villain, in the sense of like his motivation is wealth and power. So
right,
and
Palpatine is offering it to him easy,
yes.
And so he doesn't have to work very hard for it. But then he ends up in this mess, and he has to do a lot of work that he didn't bargain on. So
yeah, good pick.
Thank you. Who's your number four?
My number four is Shmi Skywalker.
Nice pick.
Yeah.
She didn't make my list.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
You know, she is a very central character to the PT, specifically episodes 1 and 2, because she, she is a great mother, and she forms a very good young boy named Anakin. And, you know, like we've talked about millions of times, right? She has enough love for him that she sets him free, even though obviously he's already been set free, but she lets him go to pursue his dreams, even though she has to be left behind. And her death, you know, dramatically changes Anakin's course of events. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think she's such a great character. And I really like, we talked about this, I think, a little bit in the last episode, but you know, I really liked watching her interact with Qui-Gon. There's a really good chemistry between these two characters. Almost as if they're like romantic. They're almost like, I remember the first time I saw Phantom Menace, I almost thought like Qui-Gon was going to hook up with Shmi, you know, like I thought they were going to create a romance for the two of them almost, because there was this tenderness between the two of them.
Right.
I think that's the thing with Shmi is a character who is, I mean, she's kind of your stereotypical like good mother, you know, I mean. It's not an original idea to Star Wars. There's characters like that in all sorts of literature and movies. But she is. Mm-hmm. She's that good, supportive, nurturing mother. And, you know, I wish she was used more in episode 2. In the sense of, like, I wish we could have seen something with her interacting with, like, Owen and Kleeg and Beru. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, to, again, solidify the relationship they had with her. And, again, solidify the connection between Anakin and Owen. But yeah, I mean, Shmi, she's such a wonderful woman that Kleeg buys her as a slave and then frees her to marry her. You know, we don't know if maybe he fell in love with her first and then he just bought her so he could marry her. We don't know. Like, that would, I'm kind of surprised we don't have a backstory on that. Maybe because people wouldn't want to read it. But I think that'd actually be really interesting. Is like, how did that happen?
Yeah. Because
She's obviously dramatically changed the course of events for the Lars family. You know, wherever Shmi goes, she seems to bring a sense of life. So, you know, she's a really positive character. So
that would be a really cool story, you know, right? maybe a short story somewhere, but
yeah,
of, you know, the Lars family, you know, before Shmi, and then when Klieg meets her and how that changes his life.
Yeah.
You know, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I really do.
You know, remember Tales from Mos Eisley? Now we need Tales from Mos Espa.
So there we go.
There we go. You're welcome, Lucasfilm.
We need it. We need a canon Tales of series.
Exactly.
Now we need
boom.
That. So,
what's your number three, Jason?
My number three, going OT this time, Grand Moff Tarkin.
Ooh, yeah.
I love this guy. You know, of course, as with most of these characters that I've named so far, he's got a great voice. I mean, how can you not love Peter Cushing? His British accent is wonderful. But aside from his wonderful British accent and the great job that Peter Cushing did portraying him, the character's great because he's, you know, obviously he is in charge of this Death Star. This is his Death Star. The Emperor gave it to him to run, so he's not going to take lip from Vader. Vader is there as an observer for the Emperor, but it's still, come on, it's still Tarkin's Death Star. So when Tarkin says Vader release him, that's why Vader does that. But I mean, he's so deliciously arrogant and loves the fact that he's
great descriptor.
Got this. Thank you. And then loves the fact that he's got this Death Star at his command. And he is going to take it and strike a crippling and final blow to the rebellion before it really gets started. And of course, our heroes manage to avoid that, but he believes with all his heart that this is his calling, that this is his destiny. And it's really cool to see villains like that who are so dedicated to what they're doing, and they believe it wholeheartedly. So, obviously not the primary villain from A New Hope, one of them, but not the primary one. So, I put him in here as a supporting character. So,
yeah,
that's my number three.
That's a great pick. He's not on my list, but you know, Stephen Stanton does a great job voicing him in the Clone Wars. And, you know, the first arc where we meet him, the Citadel arc, which is one of my favorite arcs in the Clone Wars, I hate Tarkin. But I think you're kind of meant to, right?
Right.
He's very practical, right? Like, do what you have to do, whether it's humane or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Anakin finds that motive tactics appealing, which is scary, but obviously, right, we see right there, like, there is a budding relationship, so it makes sense by the time we get to episode four that Tarkin is obviously a close advisor to Palpatine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a very different Vader's getting told what to do by him. I don't think Grand Moff Tarkin is like his head, right? Like, no. I don't think he's like his boss per se, but at the same time, you know, Vader respects him in a way he doesn't necessarily all the other Imperials you see him interact with.
Do you think that Tarkin is a person that knows that Vader is Anakin Skywalker?
I think so.
That's the feeling I get.
I definitely do. You know, that's like, you know, there's scenes like in episode four when he's, you know, like, you're all that's left of that ancient religion, my friend. You know, mm-hmm. like when he brings up Obi-Wan and stuff. Yeah. And he says, like, the presence of my old master, referring to Obi-Wan. I think
Grand Moff Tarkin say definitely. Obi-Wan. Vader doesn't say Obi-Wan, but Tarkin does. He goes, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
You know, so I think.
Oh, he definitely. I think he definitely knows.
Yeah.
I agree. Do you remember one thing I really liked about the Tarkin character was in the, the radio drama. There's a really cool scene where, you know, once the Death Star is online and stuff, one of his subordinates basically says, you know, you could kind of just go blow up the Emperor now and become Emperor. There, it's a really cool scene where, like, it's almost like some of his subordinates are trying to get him to, you know, rise up against the Emperor because he now has the most powerful weapon at his disposal.
And Tarkin doesn't.
And Tarkin doesn't, exactly. So, which was really cool because it shows his loyalty to the, right. the Imperial cause, which I think is really integral to his character.
I agree.
So that would have been kind of cool to see in the movie, but
you haven't had the chance to read the Tarkin novel, have
I? Haven't. Have you?
No, I haven't. I kind of want to.
Is it out? I didn't realize it was out.
Whoops. It's out. It came out in November, I think.
Oh, gee,
it's been out like a month, but of course that was like, oh my gosh, my play is in a week, and I got finals. And
it,
so yeah.
Did James Luceno write it? Do you know?
I believe that's okay. That's who wrote it.
I really like him, so I would definitely read it for that regard.
So. Yeah, I'll get it eventually or read it eventually. Yeah. But no, I haven't had a chance to.
Anyway, moving on.
Yes. What's your number three?
Lando.
Who's your number three, I should say?
Lando. You know, Lando, this is the reason we're doing the episode almost. But I really like Lando, and I think, again, he's kind of just in the Empire story, he's pretty much just Han Solo character arc all over again, right? Like, it's this kind of selfish man being drawn towards compassion through the friendship of others. But I just really like Lando because he's like a fun character. And he gets things done, which I really like. You know, I mean, in Empire, it seems like, I don't know, I always get the impression that he's very proud of Cloud City. He's very proud of running it. You know, granted, he may have won it in a sabacc game or something, but he's taking it very seriously, which I think is really cool because there is that other side to Lando. He is kind of the businessman. And, you know, Cloud City is meant to be something kind of luxurious, and it's like an escape place. And Lando offers that to people. And, you want to say something.
It's funny because his gambling put him in a place where he cleaned himself up.
Yeah.
That's just really funny because, you know, according to the legends, we don't know for sure if this happened because, you know, we need a new story to tell us this for the new canon. But in Legends, he won the deed to Cloud City in a game of sabacc with the owner of Cloud City. You know, he's a card shark, a gambling card shark, who won a city in a game, and he decided to take it seriously. He cleaned himself up to take this job seriously, and by all accounts, has been doing a very good job when the Empire shows up.
Yeah.
You know, so that's pretty cool. he sort of cleaned himself up on his own. He didn't have to have an intervention or a giant, he didn't have to, or a giant life-changing experience like Han did with the adventure in A New Hope to start changing him. So, but yeah, and he's also this fun-loving guy because he laughs a lot, if you've noticed. Billy D just has that infectious smile and that infectious laugh.
He does. He does. And he's good at borrowing Han's clothes.
Yes.
But, you know, and I also really like him in Jedi because, you know, he is so committed to saving Han, so committed for making up for the mistakes he made in Empire. And I think that's the thing too, right? Like, we see and going back to what I was just saying about him and the way he interacts with Cloud City, is he's committed to Cloud City. I think that's one thing I really like about Lando, is he definitely is a man of commitment. And it's funny though, I mean, we obviously see in just two films how his commitments change though. His initial commitment is kind of to himself and making himself kind of held up as, you know, somebody great. Whereas when we get to Return of the Jedi, his commitment is to his friends. So, you know, Lando's great. I just have so much fun. And he wears a cape. Come on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's not like a superhero cape too, which is really cool. It's like it's just like an everyday cape. I want an everyday cape.
I mean, why is that not in style?
Yeah. Ooh, you want to hear something fun I'm going to do?
What?
So I'm going down to New York next weekend to visit Joe again.
Nice.
And, he's going to let me borrow, although I think he still is going to let me borrow his Empire Strikes Back Han Solo costume. And since Joe and I are pretty much like the same size, I'm just way more jacked. sorry, Joe. But like height-wise, we're about the same. Mm. What I want to do is, like, because obviously it's past Halloween, so I don't really need it, but I just want to wear it to work without saying anything. I'm just going to walk into the office one day with a Han Solo costume on and just have somebody be like, what are you wearing? Be like, what are you talking about? Did you have a good weekend? Like, right? Just like change the subject. So like, just act like there's nothing abnormal about what I'm wearing.
You should make sure to wear it to your youth group.
Oh, I definitely will. Yeah.
See if they notice.
Yeah.
Sure they will, but.
Yeah. So I want to like go out to dinner in it too. Just act like it's completely normal. Don't even act like there's anything odd about what I'm wearing. So anyway, so
nothing to see here. Move along.
Yeah.
Move along.
What have we got here? Anyway, you want to say anything else about Lando?
No, I mean, he's a great character. And I love him. And I hope he shows up further on down the road in the sequel trilogy. I think my guess is we'll see him hopefully, in episode 8 or 9, but I mean, if we're trying to establish new characters and we need to, but we're bringing back some old characters, we need to make sure that we focus in as much on the new characters as possible,
right,
and keep some of the extemporaneous original returning characters out for now. So I think we'll see him. I hope we see him.
Yeah.
In the new movies. But there is that rumor going around that he's supposed to be showing up in Rebels.
Right.
So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to that if that happens.
Right. But who's your number two?
My number two, Wedge Antilles. I love the guy. I really do. When it comes to X-Wing pilots, you can't get any better than Wedge Antilles. Sorry, Luke, not even you. Wedge is my starfighter hero. And the reason why I like starfighters. I was just really excited when I... you know, first watching the OT when it came out during the special editions, I was just really excited that I recognized that guy. Wait, there's another guy? Wasn't he in the other one? Yeah, he was. That's cool. And then he was in the next one. And I was like, what? There's actually a hero that goes on through all three of these and he doesn't die? That's amazing. And then, of course, you know, it's great because he has to pull out in A New Hope. And he can't blow up the Death Star because his ship is damaged.
You can't do any more good back there?
Exactly. You can't do any good back there. Sorry. You know, and he takes off.
Let him go. Stay on the leader. Sorry. I'm just trying to, like, throw in quotes here as much
as I can. Exactly. But then he gets his redemption. He gets... I know. You love your quotes. but then he gets his redemption in Return of the Jedi, and he goes into the Death Star with Lando and blows it up from the inside. He was the first one to get the shot off. They set off the chain reaction, and the whole thing just exploded, and he survived. And of course, EU, he's all over the place, which is great.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's just a great character. And I know they were looking to see if they could get Dennis Lawson back for the sequel trilogy, and he's turned them down. But that doesn't mean we won't see Wedge again. I hope we do see Wedge again in the sequel trilogy, because when you've aged 30 years, you can get someone who looks similar enough to the original actor, and it won't be an issue.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping we get him back, but I just like the fact that there's this rebel pilot. You know, he's not the main hero. Obviously, there's the big three, and he's not one of the leaders, but you just can't kill him. And he's always around, and he keeps doing his job. He's just the everyday, plugging away, you know, unkillable pilot.
He's the everyday character.
Which is great. I love the fact that they have him in there. And, you know, I'm a Wedge fanboy. I will freely admit that. So,
yeah. You know what's funny is, like, to me, like, a couple of the biggest cult following side characters in Star Wars are Boba Fett and Wedge. And what's so funny, because there's a lot of people who are like, I don't get the Boba Fett thing. He does nothing. He shows up, captures Han, you know, and then goes out like a punk. Whereas Wedge, you could easily say, there's plenty of reason to love him. I mean, he leads the assault on the first Death Star. He takes down one of the only AT-ATs in the Battle of Hoth, and he helps blow up the second Death Star. I mean, this dude is legit. And there's something about Wedge, like just when he's on the scene, because he is like that everyday guy. I think there's such a normalcy to him as a character that we can all be like, yeah, this is real. Like he makes the story seem more real because he seems like such a real, normal, everyday character. He's the most Earth-like character in Star Wars, if that makes sense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I love Wedge. You know, I've always loved Wedge. So, anyway.
Yeah. Good. No, I mean, that's my number two. I don't have anything else to say.
Good.
But
I shall give you my number two then.
Okay, yes, you should.
His name is Chewbacca. That's pretty good.
Thank you. That's the only chewy line I can do, though. I can't do his roar. Don't ask me to do his roar, but I can do a mumbling.
But you know, I don't know if Chewie's considered a main character. I don't consider him a main character. He's definitely a supporting character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Chewie is one of those first characters I think of. Like, I don't even really like. I'm not even crazy about Chewie because in Empire he annoys me a lot because his roars are so annoying. I mean, but they make sense
in Cloud right? City.
In Cloud City. But if you did not have Chewbacca in these films, it wouldn't be the same films.
No.
And, you know, he really does humanize Han Solo, you know, right? He's kind of his conscience and his best friend. And Chewie, you know, I was talking earlier about how, you know, kind of like Tarkin seems like he's very loyal. Chewie is the epitome of loyal. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does. And that's why he's going nuts in the, you know, carbonite chamber is because he's watching his best friend be potentially put to death and he can't do anything, you know?
Right.
And which is so ironic because he is one of the most physically powerful characters in Star Wars and he's completely powerless in that scene. I think that's really cool. I think that's really cool how they limit that. P.S. Another little thing I noticed while watching Empire last week in the carbonite chamber, as they go to put the binders on Chewie, if you look quickly, you can see actually Han Solo holding his hands, like holding him steady so they can just put the binders on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Han himself is trying to subdue Chewie so that he will make it through alive because they'll shoot him if he keeps this up, right?
Right.
And Han wants him to survive. But like, I just love this. I mean, I love that Chewie, he is your best friend. You know, that's the purpose of his character is, there's nothing he wouldn't do for Han. There's nothing he wouldn't then do for Leia and Luke as well. I mean, Chewie is the most dependable character in Star Wars. And he's great. And he's funny at times. And, mm-hmm. you know, he is such an integral character to this franchise. And, you know, and like when we find out that, you know, when we did find out when they cast the sequel trilogy, to find out that Peter Mayhew was back, that we were definitely going to have Chewie again, was mm-hmm. amazing. Because Han Solo just wouldn't be the same without him. So,
right.
Which is great because that means Vector Prime doesn't hold up anymore. Chewie did not die. I mean, I liked that they did that actually. Like when that novel came out, I thought it was cool that they finally like killed off a main character. I think the story needed to go somewhere like that. But in the films, I'm so glad he'll be back.
Yes. So, me too.
Because I really do enjoy Chewie for those reasons. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course, Peter Mayhew. Has completely endeared himself to the fans with all of the appearances he makes, and he is not ashamed to say that he makes his livelihood off of being Chewbacca.
yeah,
but I mean, the guy is great, and the character, of course, is amazing. You're right; it would not be the same. Star Wars would not be the same, and probably wouldn't be as good if we didn't have Chewie. And I like the fact that. You know, we sort of establish him, you know, get the general idea of who he is in A New Hope. But then we start getting into the idea that Chewie has feelings too in Empire Strikes Back.
He's an actual character in Empire. He's more of a device in A New Hope. So.
Right. But I mean, you know, he's being on guard. He doesn't want to give away, you know, what's going on inside, you know, with these new people. It takes a while for him to warm up.
Yeah.
That's my explanation anyways.
I love that hug he gives to Luke and Hoth.
Yeah, the hug he gives to Luke, the fact that he's laughing when you know,
Leia
calls Han laser brain.
Yeah.
And then when they have to close the shield doors and he's just completely distraught is one of the most heartbreaking scenes in that movie. At least in the first half of it. But I mean, he's a great character. I love him. And, you know, you can't have the Millennium Falcon without Chewie. That's for sure. because that thing would not be working still if Chewie wasn't around. So, but I mean, yeah, no, great pick. I didn't put him in because he is sort of part of that big three group, even though he's not a big three character.
Right.
But that's just because of the way I was trying to limit my list. Otherwise, I mean, my list would probably consist of R2-D2, C-3PO, and Chewbacca as my top three. And which isn't a bad list.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give some other characters some love. So,
well, let's get to your number one then.
All right. My number one, and this is purely splurge my own fanboy. There's no rhyme or reason why this character is my number one. I don't even fully understand it, but Kit Fisto. I love the guy. I mean, as soon as he was the second action figure I bought for Attack of the Clones. I bought the Jar Jar figure and I bought the Kit Fisto figure at the same time. It was the first action figures I bought for Attack of the Clones, and I bought them the week before I saw the movie. So I liked him before I saw the movie. I was like, oh, that's a cool looking character. And he is awesome looking. I mean, maybe those big non-blinking eyes might be a little freaky at times, but whatever. And then, of course, you know, he got the best little moment in the Geonosis battle when he smiles at the camera. He got to go against Palpatine, you know, died quickly, but not immediately like everybody else. But I mean, then he got expanded up obviously in the Clone Wars and the EU, but my love of the character was there before that happened. So I don't, like I said, don't know why. He's just cool. and there's nothing wrong with having someone that you just think is cool as the number one on the list.
Right. And I think that's the case for a lot of Boba Fett fans. Even though he doesn't do anything spectacular, he just looks so cool. That was my response. I mean, the first time I saw Boba Fett, I was like, he's the coolest character. He was the first action figure I bought just because he looked so cool. but yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Kit Fisto, you just love him. I mean, I think he's a cool character too. I love when he like cuts down those droids in Attack of the Clones and just smiles. Or, you know, there's that really cool shot in the, darn it, I never get this guy's name right.
Tartakovsky
series. Where he's about to jump into the water and he just smiles and then dives into the water for like this, you know, underwater battle. You know, yes. Kit Fisto is just a cool character and he's fun. So I totally get him being, and I'm not surprised he's your number one.
Good. So, good.
So you will be very pleased with my number one.
Oh, really?
It's a duo. It's R2 and 3PO. Really? I don't consider them main characters because they don't specifically drive the plot. Even though like R2 often saves the day, he's not a major character, right? Like he's a droid.
Right.
And maybe people would disagree with that, and that's fine, but I don't consider them main characters, which is why I'm comfortable putting them as supporting characters, but to me they're the most essential supporting characters in Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
You know, for all sorts of reasons. We've done a whole episode on them, so I won't say much. but they just really are. I mean, as soon as you see them on screen, you feel like it's Star Wars. I mean, you know, in Phantom Menace, you know, we're only about 15 minutes, 20 minutes into the movie till we meet R2-D2. And you're like, oh man, R2, yeah, this is definitely Star Wars, right? and I think, you know, it's clear that they're going to be back in the sequels, and they have to be. To me, they are the congruent storytellers of the saga. And they're super essential because... In a sense, they really do, especially in the OT. They bring the characters together. They're the whole reason that everything kind of happens the way it does. Like, they're the reason Obi-Wan and Luke meet up, and then Luke and Han meet up, and so on and so forth. I mean, they kind of just – they pull everything together.
Right.
Not purposefully, but they are kind of just the common denominator in Star Wars.
Well, 3PO doesn't do it purposefully. R2 is trying to instigate a lot of it.
Yeah, right, right. Right.
No, well, on the orders of other characters, though. But I mean, I think one of the best descriptions that we've ever used to describe them was the title for the episode that we used that we did on them. And I think we called it The Saga's Witnesses.
Yeah.
You know, they witnessed everything. They're the ones that are telling us this story, so to speak. Which I'm trying to think of. Some of my problems with the EU is with some of the EU stories is that they don't have some sort of a character, like a droid of something that goes along. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a droid that goes along and just sees everything. Some of them don't. And sometimes that works, and sometimes I think it needs to be there. But obviously, with the EU being so big, you can't have R2 and 3PO being the one for everything. Sometimes I think they're overused. But they, like you said, they are absolutely essential to the main saga of Star Wars. You can't have Star Wars without them, and which is why I am so thrilled that we already know for sure that they're going to be in the sequel trilogy, and R2-D2 was the first confirmed character, officially confirmed character, for Episode 7. So, obviously, Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams know that you can't have Star Wars without these two, so which makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I'm glad we got to talk about them.
Yeah,
I just wanted to open very that. Happy.
Yeah, I figured. I was like, I'm just gonna say a couple things and let Jason take it. but hopefully, BB-8 will become good friends with them.
Oh, I know. Oh man,
yeah.
I really want to see R2 and BB-8 drive 3PO nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, that's gonna be so fun.
Something I was gonna say too is I always remember as a kid whenever I played Star Wars with my action figures, I always had 3PO and R2 like in the scenes. I didn't really have them doing a whole lot, but to me, they were always there in the story, like, right? Especially in the OT, like when I was a kid growing up, there was no PT. So with the OT, they were always present for elements of the story, right? Like in Empire, Luke leaves, but R2 goes with him and 3PO is with our other characters. And then in Jedi, like they're there with our characters, you know? And to me, it was just like, they had to be there. So like, even as a kid, I was never even crazy about 3PO and R2 as a kid, but I always had to have their action figures in the action. Like they always had to be present because they just were. They were such an integral part of the story that I just needed to have them there. So,
yeah, no, I agree. And I've got probably half a dozen R2-D2 action figures just to attest to the fact that I have to have R2 there in my stuff. So, but yes.
Yes. But,
oh man, that's great.
So there you have it. Some of our, favorite supporting characters. So, you know, later on when we talk about how you can get in touch with us and all that stuff, you know, be sure to let us know who some of your favorite supporting characters are in Star Wars. Cause there are so many to choose from, which is what's so cool. Star Wars is definitely known for having, an expansive universe of characters to enjoy. So
exactly.
But before we start to wrap things up, we do have a Larian inquiry that we are going to talk about for as long as it takes. It won't take long, I don't think. But Roger Peroni sent this one in, and he says, which deleted scene would you like to see put back into any of the Star Wars movies and why? And he says, they must be a deleted scene we know about and not scenes exclusively in novelizations, etc. So something that they actually filmed but cut. So Jason, you want to go first?
Sure. And this will come as no surprise. It'll be from Revenge of the Sith. And I haven't decided on which one is specifically because I need to go back and rewatch them just to see what each of them contains. But we need at least one of the scenes of Padme talking to Bail Organa and Mon Mothma in Revenge of the Sith. It either needs to be the Delegation of 2000 where they're talking to Palpatine. I think that might be a good one. But then there's also some where there's one in, it's either Bail Organa's chambers or Mon Mothma's chambers. And I don't remember which one it is, where they're talking about forming a loyal opposition. And I think that would have been a key scene to put back in. Because it shows that Padme is exploring these other avenues, and it gives us sort of the foundation, the groundwork of what will ultimately become the Rebel Alliance, with Bail and Mon Mothma. So one of those for me, and like I said, I don't have a specific one off the top of my head because I need to go back and rewatch them just to see what all the content in each of those scenes are. But yeah, no surprise for me. But I think one of those should be back in there. What about you, Carl?
Yeah, you know, for storytelling purposes, I would actually go with something like that as well. You know, something that really shows Padme is part of the resistance to this growing empire, even though it's not an empire yet. But I'm going to be honest. If I could get any deleted scene back, it would be the extended torture scene. I know that's so messed up. But, God, I'm sorry, people. But I don't know why I like it so much. It's disgusting. But I do. And it's just, I don't know why. I enjoy it. And that was, you know, obviously there was an extended version of the torture scene when Irvin Kershner first filmed it. Like, you actually see, you know, the device in much more action, and it's very intense, which is, I get why they cut it, because that would be a little bit dark to keep in. You know, when the Blu-rays came out and we were told we were getting deleted scenes, I was so pissed that wasn't on there. And, you know, it's technically not a deleted scene so much as like an alternate take. You know, it was like an extended scene that they just trimmed it down. I bet you they only trimmed it by a few seconds. I'm sure it wasn't like a long scene, but I don't know why, but I'd love to see that. And here's kind of why, to try to like get away from the sadistic stuff, because it's not like I like torture, far from it. But when I was watching Empire the other day, and we got to the torture scene, there's something very dark about that scene. And, you know, we were talking about this a little bit ourselves, Jason, you and I, we're talking about, you know, how we'd kind of like to see the shape of episode 7 take, right? And like a lot of people, obviously a lot of adult fans want to see it go a little bit darker. And I feel like Empire is the perfect example of how Star Wars can be dark, because that scene is very dark, but it's not like, it's not Chris Nolan dark, right? And that's not, right. I'm not slamming Chris Nolan dark, because obviously I'm a huge Dark Knight trilogy fan. You know, I don't think that's, that form of dark fits with Star Wars.
But
there's something very dark about some of those happenings on Cloud City, like when Chewie's getting tortured and then Han gets tortured. You know, there's something just very serious. I think what's so important is like our characters are seriously threatened here in a way that they have yet to be. Like thinking back to like the trash compactor scene in A New Hope, to me as a kid, whenever I saw that, even the first time, I was never nervous that they were going to not make it out of there. Right? Like those are such cliche scenes that you know they're going to get out alive.
And the other thing with the trash compactor is it wasn't like a deliberate thing. It wasn't like someone was actively like, oh, they went down to the trash compactor. Let's smash it.
Exactly.
No, it was just, was the rotation. It was full. It needed to get smashed. Right. So,
you know, and I think what's happening to them on Cloud City is it just shows that our characters are really at threat and somebody is vindictively doing this, which is what's just so scary. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. I think that's what's so scary about it. It's not like horror film scary, but it's just scary because Han's in real trouble there and there's nothing he can do about it and there's nothing his friends can immediately do about it. So I think that's why part of that, that's the reason I actually kind of actually like that scene so much is because it really shows the threat to our characters. I mean, they're in real danger here. And I think that's really good. You've got to put, if you really want to love your plot and love your, you know, your conflict, you've really got to have your characters in real danger. And that's what we see happen on Cloud City. And which is great, too, because it's got to be something really strong to draw Luke.
Right.
So, because Luke's not super strong in the Force yet. So Vader's really got to, like, one-up it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Anyway, so that would be mine. So hopefully people still don't think I'm insane or stop listening to me.
No.
But
I make a big deal out of it just because it's funny. It's one of our bits.
Yes. Yes. Jason's rolling his eyes. He's terrified.
Yeah, that's it. I can't.
But anyway, Jason, before we wrap it up, we do have a new matchup that one of our Larians gave us. I can't remember which one, but I know you do. So
yes.
Why don't you give that to us?
This is given to us by our buddy Jackson. And I like this one. We've had both of these characters in several matchups before, but never against each other. So let's go ahead and do this. We will have new matchup is Ahsoka Tano versus Starkiller or Galen Merrick or the Secret Apprentice, whatever you want to call him today, from The Force Unleashed. So, and obviously this is in a neutral area on even ground. But yeah, so I'm curious to see how this will go because there are big fans of both of these characters out there that mm-hmm. listen to the show. So I'm interested to see how this one will turn out. And I need to make up my own decision too. I don't know
Me
yet.
Me too. Yeah, same here. I don't either.
So. But if they want to respond to the matchup, or if they want to tell us who some of their favorite supporting characters are, or send in a LAN inquiry, where can they do that, Carl?
They can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/wampuslayerpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampuslayer, or you can send us an email at wampuslayerpodcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever, wherever you get our podcast. That would be great. We would really appreciate that. But any final thoughts before we wrap this episode up?
You know, we're really questing hard to try to get those 400 likes on Facebook by Christmas. I try to be optimistic as I can, but it's not looking like it might happen by Christmas. So maybe we'll extend it a week. Maybe by 2015, we'll have 400 likes on Facebook. That is that is our challenge to you, Larians. If you listen to us and you know a friend who's a Star Wars fan but doesn't listen to us, by all means, recommend us if you think we're good. But I yeah. assume if you listen to us, you must. So, but you right. know, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're 17 away from 400 on Facebook, and we're only 7 away on Twitter. So,
giddy up.
So, Twitter's getting it done. it but,
is a, yeah.
But is that it? Is there anything else?
No, that's it for me.
Excellent. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Wampus Lair podcast. Be sure to check out the Wampus Lair and all the other great podcasts of the Star Wars Report 2nd Airborne Division at StarWarsReport.com. You can also check out all of our back catalog. Even the episodes that aren't on iTunes anymore are on the website. But for Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampus Lair.
Chewie, take care of yourself, okay?